Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. And Real Talk is the show about anything. Anything that piques my interest and hopefully yours, dear listener. And it's lunchtime, so our topic today is a perfect topic for lunchtime. We're going to talk about food, the food that we eat, and the dirt that it comes from, and how that dirt affects the nutritional value of our food and our lives in general. I have asked Amy Beth Holmes, who is a natural resources and agricultural consultant who actually lives here on Vashon Island, to help us explore this question. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. The subject is soil health and soil degradation. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us the definition of soil degradation? What is degraded soil?
I would say that in general, degraded soil is soil that's lacking some or all of the key nutrients that we identify for plant health, and that would be nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium. So NPK is typically how we look at it. Additionally, I would say pH is something that's an indication of health of soil as well. And around here, we tend to have acidic soils due to our high rainfall. It actually kind of pushes soil into being acidic. And if soil's too acidic, it's hard to grow what you want to grow. And instead, we grow really good weeds.
Yes, I know that well. So what are the causes of soil degradation other than a lot of rain?
Specifically to Vashon, our soil is not what we would call, say, prime soil for farmland. It receives no natural inputs, like, say, in a river valley that would have periodic flooding. Our soils came from the last glaciers. The last glacier was called the Vashon Glacier.
It's quite a while ago.
Yeah, 20,000 years ago, yeah. Approximately.
That's old dirt.
Yeah, and our entire island is covered with glacial outwash. So what we have and what we're trying to work with here came from Alaska, I like to think of. Huh. And it was just dropped from the glacier. The glacier came as far down as Vashon, and then it stopped. So our soil is what we call glacial till and outwash. It's not naturally that, like, bountiful. So you have to continually add things to it here. So it's really easy for our soil to be degraded, and it actually is because of the rain. It washes out the nutrients that we otherwise would like to keep in the soil.
Well, let's go beyond Vashon to a global perspective, because I'd like our listeners to understand how agribusiness, we're all still consuming a lot of food from corporate farms.
Yes.
And can you tell us how those corporate farms contribute to soil degradation, how big agribusiness contributes to soil degradation?
Once we get into, you know, really large amounts of crops that are grown, there's some fundamental choices that farmers have to make. For example, do they want to be organic or do they want to be conventional in their farming practices? If you are organic, you're always going to be struggling with weeds and pests in a more dynamic, active way. And that usually means tilling, and tilling is one of the ways that we degrade our soil. Even if you are an organic farmer, it's one of the best ways that we know to kind of get ahead of some of the weeds, other than getting down your hands and knees and constantly pulling them.
If you're
on a larger scale, there's just not enough hours in the day. So that's kind of the trade-off with organic. Now, conventional farmers would be farmers that use maybe non-organic methods to stay ahead of those pests and those weeds. And that usually means getting in bed with a company like Monsanto. And those seeds are genetically engineered to resist the use of pesticides or insecticides that would otherwise you would think it would kill that plant. And so what happens is you can plant a whole field of, say, corn, and then after it's sprouted, so have all these weeds, but you can spray the entire field with something akin to Roundup, and everything will die except for the corn, which has been genetically modified to resist that.
So this corn is genetically modified, which makes a difference in how it works with our bodies, and then it's absorbing this pesticide.
Yeah, I think the chemical companies would probably like to say it gets it resists those chemicals. Maybe it doesn't absorb them like other plants. But there, you know, there's definitely a lot of research going on right now, trying to figure out, you know, do these genetically modified organisms affect us differently? Do we process them differently? And do they pick up those chemicals that would otherwise kill a plant? And then are we also consuming it? I know there's always been the Roundup, especially, they say, oh, it degrades so quickly. And even in organic practices, we do have different sprays that we use. On our farm, we use usually bacteria that we'll spray. And these bacteria maybe are, you know, don't do anything to the plant, but they may affect, say, a moth that would otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, try and eat an apple or something like that. And even though that bacteria won't affect anything, there's always a label on it saying, you know, you spray it, but don't harvest for so many days. It's similar with the conventional farmers and using something like Roundup.
And I have read studies, and I can't quote these verbatim, that indicate, though, that we are eating Roundup. And what is the, do you know the chemical... the chemical substance in Roundup, what is it?
You stumped me there. I can look them up really quick. There's a whole variety of them. And even in, you know, the best practices, sometimes farmers will have to kind of use a specific chemical to get rid of, say, Himalayan blackberry. And I certainly don't want to vilify them, because I recognize, being a farmer myself, that there's sometimes that, you know, sometimes you do need a little bit of help. But it's, I think it's more of a case of where is that used and how is it used. There's a great difference between using, you know, some kind of, okay, it's coming to me. They're all a part of a phosphate, usually is the type. There's a big difference between using it on, you know, an invading pest like blackberries and using it on a crop that, you know, hopefully won't be affected, and then you're going to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these large agribusinesses grow huge amounts of food for mass production, mm-hmm. mass feeding of the rest of us. And they're degrading the soil with pesticides. What about the fact that they tend to use the same soil year after year for the same crop?
Yeah. So we're talking about conventional farmers. Let's just
yes.
talk about them.
And
so
the nutritional value yeah. that they create.
So here's the interesting trade-off. Conventional farmers actually sometimes can do a really good job at taking care of the soil. The plants, you know, are maybe sprayed with what we would think of as, you know, unappealing chemicals. But the soil itself, the funny trade-off is with conventional farmers, a lot of them are doing cover cropping and they're doing no-till. They don't have to till the ground, because they're instead spraying all the plants and maybe killing off the plants. And isn't this a funny trade-off?
It is.
I had a chance to meet with a farmer out in Delaware who was very proud that he had not tilled his soil in over 25 years. And he had brought in a soil sample to this conference that I was attending, and it was gorgeous soil. I mean, it was just stunning. Our soil never looks that dark and that loamy. And I was like, wow. So I asked him, I was like, well, so you're not tilling? He's like, no. And I asked, you know, are you growing the same crop? No, he rotates. And it's a classic rotation for conventional farmers to rotate corn with soybeans. And those two things kind of balance each other out, and they will feed each other. But ironically, you know, a lot of that crop is not even staying in the U.S. It's going somewhere else, which is a whole other thing. And then I said, well, you know, how are you avoiding tilling? Oh, well, I cover crop. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic, because cover crop will actually accumulate nitrogen from the air and put it into the soil, which will feed the plants. Great. I said, awesome. How are you stopping that cover crop? How are you killing it? How are you harvesting? What are you doing? Because in organic farming, what we typically do is we mow it, we turn it in while, when we mm-hmm. till, and that's sort of how we get that nitrogen in. He goes, oh, I spray it.
Oh.
I was like, oh. So there's, you know, soil wise, sometimes conventional farmers can say, oh, I did great. The question that remains, and again, I know that there's some research looking into this, is there any kind of long-term absorption of these chemicals into the soil profile? We don't know that yet. And as you could guess, it's probably something that a company like Monsanto has no interest in supporting. So it's hard to find funding to do that kind of research. Yeah.
So what are the global implications for feeding the human population and for nourishing, which are two different things?
Small question. Yeah, that's
easy. Yeah, let's go global.
Okay. So I think it kind of comes down to recognizing the true cost of food. And this has always been a struggle. I struggle with it when, you know, I'm trying to grow my own food and my husband and I will joke about how expensive, you know, we always call it the $64 tomato. There was a book that was written about that and it was called the $64. We grow a lot of $64 tomatoes on our farm. The true cost of food is outstanding. And I don't fault anyone for, you know, trying to get the cheapest price they can. But we all do have to remember that the cheap price is because we're all defaulting to these larger farms. The sad thing for me is that there's so much being produced here in the U.S. that's not staying in the U.S. and it's not feeding us. Instead, it's feeding livestock, even in other countries. Mm. A good example is we grow beautiful alfalfa in the state of Washington, just gorgeous. And a lot of people on the island who raise horses will say, oh, yeah, 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 my horses love it. Oh, yeah, you know, that's what they eat for additional nutrition. But the best alfalfa that we grow gets shipped to China, and it's fed to other livestock there. So it's not even food that's being raised for our consumption directly. And what I'm always trying to advocate for is getting people to grow more food for themselves and to also kind of really bite that bullet and support local agriculture as much as possible to encourage all of us who are little farmers around here to keep going. Because eventually, I mean, you know, something maybe will happen and we'll need to be more reliant on ourselves. And if we can't get out of that cycle of producing mass quantities of food that doesn't even stay in the U.S., yeah, we're in big trouble.
So what are the politics behind this? Because I've spoken with some of my mm-hmm. friends here on Vashon who are local farmers, and the cost of food is a big issue. And what they say is they do not get subsidies like the big farmers do. And the big farmers apparently get money from selling crops overseas as yes. well. What are the politics behind this?
Yeah. Okay. So I also am the vice chair of the King County Ag Commission, yeah. and we work really hard to bring specifically these kind of issues to Dow Constantine's attention. The biggest issue that I would say us farmers here on Vashon are struggling with, for sure, is the cost of land. We estimate, like very lowball estimation, that an acre of raw land here goes for at least $50,000.
Woo!
So if you have 5 acres, that's already, we're looking at $250,000. And what sets up is you either have the cash to be a landowner, but then you can't afford to farm. You have to go get a day job yeah. to pay for it and to pay the taxes, the property taxes on it. Or you may be a skilled farmer, but you can't get the capital together to also own the land. I actually am contracting with the county right now to assess the entire island and look at what is being farmed and what could be farmed. And then we're going to look at the difference between those two. And I'm then going to try and connect with some of these people who have potential farmland and they're not farming it and kind of get to that other layer of why are they not farming it? Is it because they have to have a day job? Is it because, they found value in, say, boarding horses there instead? And see if we can start to kind of peel back those reasons and get more people growing more food. In other parts of the county where there is more, I'd say, food that's grown, like, say, Snoqualmie Valley, they have this added layer of protection called an agricultural production district. We don't have that. And it's a different way of zoning the land. So the land is actually tends to be less expensive for farmland. And there's these sort of added protections. We don't have those on Vashon. Those of us who are farming right next to people who have, you know, beautiful estates and these well-developed gardens. And although, you know, my neighbors may say, oh, you know, I think your sheep are so cute. If my sheep get in and eat their roses, they're not cute anymore.
They're not so cute.
And so I feel this tension as a farmer to both respect, you know, my neighbors who choose not to farm, but also I feel very vulnerable that, you know, it just takes them complaining about, you know, maybe my rooster is too loud, maybe my sheep are too smelly, maybe the cow manure that I just had delivered to my farm is gonna, you know, and just that added level of stress, I think, is a big burden that us farmers have on the island.
As you talk about the available land for farming and the, like the people who have the land and the people who are skilled farmers, mm-hmm. what are the opportunities of putting those two people together? Say the skilled farmers leasing the land from those who don't choose to farm.
That is the long-term goal. There was this really fantastic organization that unfortunately has kind of been dispersed out to other groups. It was called the Cascade Harvest Coalition. And it's now sort of been piecemealed out kind of to the TILF, which used to be Seattle TILF, but now it's all, it's the trying to sort of spread out over the whole state. And within Cascade Harvest, and now it's within TILF, was something called FarmLink. And there's actually a great farmer on the island, Sarah Lowry, who used to be attached to Hogsback. She ran FarmLink. And FarmLink is just this wonderful idea. It still needs to be kind of brought back up to speed, I think, now that it's changed hands. And the idea between of FarmLink was to take exactly what you talked about, people who have land and they're not farming it, and people mm-hmm. who want to farm it, and trying to connect them together.
Yeah.
But what was realized through Sarah's hard work, and then now that TILF is trying to take it over, they're just swamped. It takes a lot of delicate handholding and relationship building to make that work. And currently, TILF doesn't have the bandwidth to do that. So part of the contract that I'm doing with the county, we're hoping that that maybe will actually come to fruition. We've actually put in a grant to try and restart FarmLink next year, and hopefully I'll get to do that.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
It's 12:17, and you're listening to The Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM KVSH LP, Vashon Island, Washington. The show is Real Talk with myself, Susan McCabe, and my very special guest, Amy Beth Holmes, who is a natural resources and agriculture consultant. And we are here because of the generosity of Windermere Vashon, who supports all our community information programming. And thank you very much, Windermere, for allowing us to do this. We're talking about soil degradation, mm-hmm. soil health, and nutritional value, farming. So we've gone both global and we're kind of moving into the local question. Do you have any idea how many farmers there are here on Vashon?
Oh, I'd like to say that anyone who grows anything is a farmer. I think of farmer is a very qualitative word, and if you feel that you are farming, then you are a farmer. Who am I to say yes, you're a farmer? No, you're not a farmer. So I try to be inclusive. So you know, if you grow a tomato plant, you're a farmer. You know, I think farming is just this way of connecting with our environment and making something.
Yeah, you mentioned that you try to encourage people to grow their own food. Mm-hmm. So if we are to support our local farmers here on Vashon, are we not competing with them by growing our own food?
Oh, no. If anything, I think you become inspired to try and make you know, an entire meal out of local food, right? And maybe you have coming ripe in your garden broccoli, but you know, you really want some basil and the basil isn't ready yet. I hope it gets people, I mean, at least it does for me, jump on your bike or hop in your car and go to the local farm stands in your neighborhood and see what they have. There's also, Vega has just started this really great program, the Vashon Fresh. And it's really this fantastic way of all of these farmers kind of coming out of the woodwork and saying, oh, I have this week and I have extra of this. And it's this other cool way of sort of filling your plate with local food.
I think. Could you tell us more specifically about that program? Because maybe everyone doesn't know.
Sure. I would say if anyone's interested, go to the VEGA website. If you just Googled VEGA, it comes up pretty quickly. And it's actually being run through VEGA. You can shop through this. It is an app, but I think you can also just go directly through the website. And it's a weekly offering that people can peruse what is available from local farms and kind of pull together a collection of different produce. And Abby, one of our local farmers, is sort of managing it, and I see her sitting at the Village Green. I believe it's Thursdays are the pickup days, and then she's the person that you look for, and she hands over the produce. So it's kind of...
Is it a subscription?
Nope. Does not have to be.
So I can just go online mm-hmm. and look at what's there and yep. say, ooh, gee, I want some of that, and yep. I pick it up on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so it's this idea of trying to create more of a hub and a concentration of what is available in one place. So,
all right. So if I'm going to farm in my backyard
mm-hmm.
and grow food, what would you tell me to start with
okay.
in the soil?
Perfect. So I always encourage people if they have the bandwidth, especially if somebody says, I'm going to start a farm, I always say, okay, if you can handle it, don't really do anything for the first year. Just observe. Watch the seasons, watch the weather, watch the sun. And you need to kind of sort of pay attention to what grows really well on your property and what doesn't grow really well. And you want to sort of support what's already doing well and shy away from maybe your pipe dream of what you think you would like to grow. Our place is a good example. When we bought our place, it had already an orchard, and this orchard is historic. It's been around since the 20s. So we've built out our orchard a bit more over the last 9 years that we farmed, because this orchard has been there since the 20s. So the land is telling us that works. Conversely, you know, I was like, oh, I really want to grow blueberries. No, that didn't work.
Too dry for blueberries, isn't it?
Yeah, it just didn't work. We had a lot of grass, and I was having to get on the tractor and mow a lot. So we said, let's get some sheep. So we've been raising meat sheep for several years now, and that they do a much better job at mowing than I do. And then we have the benefit of that full loop of, you know, they eat the grass, and then we and then other people in the community get to eat local meat. So that's pretty powerful. So that's what I always recommend when somebody's like, I want to grow something. I'm like, great. You know, decide where you want to grow something, at least watch the sun, at least pay attention to what's already growing there. And then the second part is you can get a soil test. The King Conservation District, where I used to work, offers a soil program where they offer 5 free soil tests to anyone in King County. Ooh. So you can give them the soil test, and they will test it for you for those basic nutrients, the nitrogen, the phosphorus, potassium, and the pH, which are those kind of key things that we look for in soil health and soil degradation. And then from that, you can either ask them for help, or you could ask me for help, or you could ask probably any other farmer on the island for help for how to sort of supplement your soil to get it as healthy as possible.
So the health of your soil, is that going to tell you what you can grow on your property, or is it going to tell you what you need to do to make it healthy enough to grow anything?
I think it's more the latter.
Okay.
Yeah, rather than the former. I like to say that, you know, there's a potential for anything, but it's, you know, do you want to be Sisyphus and try and, you know, like, I'm going to grow blueberries despite, you know, or do you want to, you know, kind of go with the flow. Our tagline on our farm is benign neglect is the best way to go. So if there's something that you can kind of just nurture along that is naturally happy there. So if you happen to have soil that, you know, I live up on a hill, and so our soil drains really fast. So I'm always looking for drought-tolerant plants and grasses. That's why I grow a lot of good pasture grass rather than, like, I gave up. I have, like, 4 blueberry plants. That's all I'm ever going to get. And, you know, but if you are at the bottom of a hill and maybe you seem, you know, you see some standing water in the winter time or something like that, maybe you could grow blueberries. Maybe that would be better for you.
So. Yeah, I have 2 blueberry plants I've been nursing for 7 years, and I think I've got a couple berries this year, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So you are a farmer. We've only got 5 minutes mm-hmm. left here. You are a farmer, and you are actually doing multiple types of farming. You're growing animals. You're growing fruit, mm-hmm. Vegetables.
Yes.
And what else?
So on our farm, we like to say we are mostly a fruit farm. So we grow cane fruit. So we have berries, lots of different kinds of berries. They're in our farm stand right now. We have loganberries, cascade berries, raspberries, and blackcap raspberries. And then we have orchard fruits. So we have a pretty diverse orchard of peaches and plums, pears, apples, cherries. Wow. Yeah, keeps me busy. And then the animals, actually, we realized were a real key for soil health. So the sheep provide us with great manure over the winter. Not enough, but they do provide us with some manure, mm-hmm. and they're fertilizing the pasture. We will have them flash graze in the orchard. So that will add some good nitrogen from there as they eat the grass and then comes out the other end. That's a good fertilizer as well. So we say we're more fruit farmers, but we also, you know, grow some good meat, and we have chickens we have that follow after the sheep. As well.
Well, and so that was my question. How mm-hmm. does one balance all those different types of farming in order to maintain the health of the soil for the nutritional value of the food that you're growing?
Start small, grow slow. And in all seriousness, that I think that is key to start small and make only one change at a time. This is where I'm also a scientist, so the idea of experimenting, you only change one thing at a time. So, you know, maybe you start with growing some tomatoes in your backyard. Awesome. And then, you know, you're like, okay, I got this. I want maybe some local fertilizer, so get some chickens. And then you can compost their manure and add that back to your garden. And then maybe you're like, this is pretty good. Like, I want to extend. Then maybe you get a sheep or a goat or something like that and just slowly but surely grow it. The risk I think people sometimes take is they want to just kind of have a little bit of everything in the start.
Yeah, right.
And then things can kind of spiral out of control. And that's when we get soil degradation. We get erosion, nutrient runoff. And those are the calls that I would sometimes get when I still was at the conservation district, those panics of like, oh my gosh.
It's all falling
apart. Yeah.
Amy Beth Holmes, I am so grateful for your coming here to talk with us about soil health and soil degradation. Can you take a minute to tell us real quickly what projects you're currently working on?
Oh, yeah. As I said before, I'm currently doing a contract with the county to assess farmland. And so that's starting up this week. So people will start to see me, you know, maybe knocking on their doors or waving from the roadside. Additionally, I'm going to be doing a contract with Washington State University, and they have a class called Cultivating Success. So I will be helping to lead that class this fall. It starts in September and it goes until early December. And I'll be hosting that at the Land Trust Building on Monday evenings. And it's meant for farmers who have small acreage. Like, you know, I only have 7, that's small acreage.
That's small.
And it's designed to help us farmers build out sort of a business plan and figure out a way to be successful and long-term farmers and grow more local food. So,
well, and I want to close this to all you Vashon listeners and say, please support your local farmers. Go to all those farm stands, buy that fresh produce, if indeed you're not growing it in your own backyard. You've been listening to Real Talk with myself, Susan McCabe, and my guest, Amy Beth Holmes. The subject has been soil health, soil degradation, how to maintain soil, and how to encourage farmers locally and globally to keep the soil healthy and maintain nutrition. Stay tuned to Voice of Vashon this afternoon. You never know what you're going to hear here. You do know that next week on Real Talk, we're going to talk about, with Mick Coleman, about bringing acting into life and how you can make that work. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Windermere Vachon, for supporting all our community information programming.